Welcome to Androids and Assets, a weekly podcast about the political economy of all of our favorite science fiction and fantasy series. Join us as we investigate the hidden meanings in fantastic worlds and what the future can tell us about today. We upload new episodes every Monday. We hope you enjoy it. Hi, I'm Steven.
And I'm Marshall.
And welcome to Androids and Assets, the speculative fiction of political economy.
What?
We're going to go with it. We're rolling with it.
What he means to say is the political economy of speculative fiction. We had the distinct pleasure of going to Downsizing over the weekend. Matt Damon's newest movie out in December 2017. I think it's Oscar bait. Downsizing. It's an existential film that will have you questioning, why am I in this theater? Downsizing, I think, does a really nefarious thing when it talks about quality of life, and it's not what you have that matters, it's who you have and how you lived your life and what relationships you have. I don't necessarily disagree with some of that sentiment. Materialism is definitely a problem, and I think has led to...
It is the reason we have an ecological disaster.
Yes.
Undisputed. It's why.
Yeah, given that materialism is the root of capitalism, yeah, I'll agree. So Downsizing, though, rather than reaching for a deeper criticism of the systemic issues that lead to sort of keeping up with the Joneses and wanting more and never being satisfied and marketing and all of these things that current life leads to people feeling like they need more and never being satisfied with life, it doesn't criticize those things. It just says, this is an individual choice that you have made and you can unmake to make your life better. You don't need to be materialistic. Just give it all up. Look at this guy. He lost everything, has nothing anymore, and his life is good because he made choices to connect with people and have better relationships and start giving back to the poor. And you could do that too. And the reason I think a lot of this is super nefarious is in that fantasy setting, he had numerous benefactors that kept him fed and sheltered, and he didn't have to want for anything. So even in his most abject poverty, when he, you know, gave up his job just to help someone out, he still had wealthy friends who were feeding him,
taking a private yacht across a fjord in Norway to visit a commune.
Yeah.
But yeah.
At no point was he ever lacking basic necessities. And for most people in the world today, if you were to just quit your job, you don't have someone who will care for you and put you up in their private yacht. There's lots of private yachts that could put you up, but good luck getting on one of them. And I think that's where the problem is. It's one thing to say, don't be so materialistic. It's another to say, oh, just forget everything. You can divorce yourself from society when really you cannot. There's a certain base level that you need to work just to have the basic necessities before you can start to go beyond and develop.
Maslow's hierarchy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what the pyramid. Like, you gotta eat, you gotta be sheltered. And he was all those things. So yeah, the gist of Downsizing is basically that in lieu of the pending ecological disaster, scientists develop technology that makes people less than 1%, like 0.03.
Something like that.
I think. Percent. Or yeah. Much, much smaller. And can do this with any organic material. This has a bizarre economic consequence because allegedly, according to Downsizing, when you downsize, your money goes farther. Basically, the costs of sustaining you as an individual are then dramatically less. And that's the assumption the movie gives. And that's also then the reason why people would undergo this bizarre procedure to be reduced down.
Yes, I think that That leads to people's desire to downsize. I'm not sure that I disagree with the ecological reasoning behind it. If everyone was really small.
Yeah. There'd be less ecological impact.
Yeah. There'd just be less waste. Yeah. Even if you ate at a scale the same amount, if you're less than a percentage of your mass, it would take, you know, more than 100 of you to have that equivalent waste. Yeah. So I can understand.
But this is 0.03 or 0.003. So it's even like they're due to.
Oh, no, yeah, it was so thousands of people.
It'd actually take that 6 billion and turn that into a much more manageable, or 8 billion, and turn that to much more manageable, 8 million people by reducing it one
at least. 1,000. Yeah.
Well, more than 8 million. So it would reduce the population, the functional size of the population down.
I'm not sure that everything would scale.
Certainly water, food, and land usage would scale.
Yes.
Or we hope. You have some objections to think. Small people might not be able to eat big food. Like, the question we have is, if you grow one stalk of grain, can you take that head of grain and feed 1,000 people for a year?
I say no, because they talk about cellular miniaturization. And I think, for me, there's just a couple of problems. And I'm not a physicist. We need to get Pasquale back.
Or talk to one of the animal agronomists in our life.
If they're miniaturizing these people, either they're expending a lot of energy into those people to actually shrink every cell that they have, or they're not shrinking the cells themselves, but are shaving off a large portion of their mass and rearranging the remainder
in a functionally equivalent fashion.
Right. I think it explicitly says, though, that it's the first, it's the former, that they are shrinking you at a cellular level, which to me suggests then that you can't digest big food because it's still at a larger cellular level. So when you're eating a grain of rice that's as big as you are, well, not quite that.
You'd have to grind it up. They'd have to process it down. Like,
right.
I don't know. Insects can eat. Well, okay, yeah. I mean, there becomes all these issues. Yeah, I mean, snake's biting its tail here.
I think regardless, so it might have an ecological impact, but I don't think it has the economic impact that they talk about. The scale that they give is roughly, and this is because it's also, I'm saying roughly, there's actual numbers we could crunch and find a scale, but it's filtered through a corporation who's obviously going to be taking a cut. So Matt Damon and his wife, played by
Kirsten Wiig.
They go to Leisureland and they're looking at how much it would cost for them to
downsize.
And they're going through some numbers and, you know, they say, oh, if you sell your house and all your belongings, liquidize everything, you would have $156,000. And that is a very comfortable number. And they express shock at this. And she says, oh, well, your $156,000 of big money translates to a $12 million equivalent of downsized money. And I think the intent here is that you can buy a small amount of food and it would go the same distance, right? You can buy a fraction of a percentage of the food you would normally buy and have that. And you can buy, your house takes a fraction of the resources to build.
Yeah. Laura Dern is in this movie for 5 minutes to tell us how cheap diamonds are.
Yes, you can.
Fucked.
Weird. My question is that if the food needs to be processed that much more, you're probably having small people doing the processing. You've got something to say.
This drives at something that is, I mean, the most expensive part of most things is the people involved in its development. So and none of that goes away when you switch to small people, except maybe I said theoretically small people would earn less. I don't know.
But they can't. They're being told they're earning more.
Yeah. So it becomes this weird thing. Like, the most expensive part of any good is the fact that people designed it, put it together, harvested and processed the raw materials into and then
into the various layers of
moved labor. It and sold it to you. So and none of that goes away when you downsize, even if the raw materials involved are dramatically reduced.
So maybe the very first people who were small would see some benefit. Because everyone else is big and they can just shave off a portion of the big food. But as more and more people become small, more and more labor is being done by small people, and your money becomes worth less because you're paying other people who are small to now take over those functions.
And plus now you have to live in abject fear of mosquitoes.
So some of the things, like, they have small houses. I'm assuming all of those small houses were built by small people.
Or they're built by big people, in which case then they're also expensive.
Well, I mean, yes. But a big person might be able to frame a house on their own, whereas it would still take a crew of whatever, a dozen.
That's true. A dollhouse is cheaper than a trailer.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But I just don't know that we have the technology to wire and plumb a small house in a functional way.
Yeah.
Given the size that we are.
Well, it's interesting, though, because, like, Leisureland, like, almost none of the small people work. And the one job we do see them doing is working in a call center. So Matt Damon, when he goes for his divorce and loses a bunch of his money, he goes to work in a call center.
There are cleaning staff.
Yeah, and there's maids and, yeah, who live in a weird ghetto. So, yeah, it's interesting. The image of downsizing is that it's all white upper class professionals retiring early to a lavish and extravagant lifestyle that they can now manage now they're small.
So the economic incentive is there that you can make your savings that seem pitiful in your current life become extremely valuable in a small life. That's the super incentive. That's why they're going to do it. They're not doing it to help the environment. They're doing it because it helps them keep up with the Joneses. They specifically choose a house that is way bigger than they need just because they find it attractive.
And there's this really shitty thing that everyone always says in Leisureland. The greeting they give each other is, "And thanks for saving the environment." And they all make themselves out to be some sort of martyrs. And it's really, I think it's deliberately supposed to make you angry.
None of them are doing it for the environment. They're doing it for the materialism. And I think the movie, that's one of its desired critiques, is they want to point out that materialism is not what makes you happy. I can agree with that.
I guess the thing we talk about is, my stance is that downsizing it's fundamentally, it's about existentialism. It's dropping the narcissism and the belief that you're so special and you're going to save things and you're so important to the world, and kind of shedding that, letting that go, and just kind of being as you are in what is, and stopping just the fight and the narcissistic struggle against reality. And that's a good thing to say. I think it's something that's helpful to people. But the problem is when you drop that inside the very polarized context of climate change, it kind of gets messy. It gets real icky, because then you're the guy showing up to a fight and you're like, where one side is unfortunately probably right and the other side is almost certainly wrong, and you're the guy standing in the middle. Well, both sides have good points. Let's just love each other and work this out. When unfortunately, that's not appropriate for that context. And although I think when the time does come to fight, if you're the guy showing up and you're just being like, I'm let go, I'm going to do this, I'm flowing with what's going on, you'll probably be a more effective soldier for whatever side you're on. But that's not the time to be being like, whoa, wait, this is all meaningless. I struggle with it because I really feel that narcissism is a huge sticking point in people's individual climate journeys. Because on the one side, either you're like, I'm a person, I'm going to throw myself into this, usually because you have the wealth and means to do so. And you become very angry at the world around you, and it very much feeds your sense of specialness and uniqueness. It becomes part of an identity for you. So when you are doing things that are maybe not ideal, if anyone challenges you on that, becomes very offensive and hurtful to you, and your recalcitrant train change that way. And then also, on the other hand, what happens, I think, to most people is they're being told by somebody, one of these first group of people I talked about, that they're literally killing the planet for doing what is perfectly normal and what everyone else around them seems to be doing. And then they feel very hurt and very offended that they are killing the planet, and then they reject it completely. And I think this is the issue we come in with again with climate. It's people getting really hung up on, often people feel hurt by it, I guess, and so then that causes them to reject it, or it makes it too difficult to process it and to think about it meaningfully. And I think it's a legitimate problem, but it gets too muddy. It's too muddy here, I think, in the way it's done in downsizing. And I think that fundamentally the place it needs to go is it really needs to go for the throat on that consumerism, on that we can have it all narrative. So that's got to go, because that's a problem. It walks up to the line of like consumerism is the problem and our bullshit is the issue. And it just kind of stops just short of it. And it's like, well,
I mean, conveniently in the movie and maybe conveniently in real life, they go over the tipping point of environmental disaster, that enough methane is being released that it becomes a vicious cycle that humanity is powerless to stop.
And this is a real thing.
This is absolutely a real potential problem that we are racing toward. We're not tiptoeing toward it. We are racing full tilt toward it. And they pass over this point in the movie and they say, well, there's nothing actually now that we can do to prevent environmental disaster. So why change your life?
And some people try to like build an enclosure in the mountains. You know, some of the small people, visionary scientists in Norway, they go and they have a sperm bank and they have this really self-sustaining life system. And they have this deep inside a mountain colony.
As smalls. They are meters, small people.
Yeah, several meters into a rock. They have their cave.
Well, a kilometer.
It's
but
a
yes.
kilometer. Yeah, so.
1.6 kilometers into the
yeah. The so Earth. It's like a 2-day, like a 1-day walk for the little people.
Those ones are saying we're going to give up the quality of life that we've become accustomed, so that we can preserve humanity. And every other person just continues on with the life that they know. Because it's going to be 300 or 400 years before there's actual disaster. So why give up everything now? And Matt Damon's character, I think, really exemplified the narcissism when he decides, well, he could do something meaningful with his life and join these people in their sanctuary.
And be the one that survives.
Yeah.
To start again.
And he's joining them. And they begin the walk and he turns to somebody beside him and starts talking and they say, we're walking uphill. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's to prevent flooding. We're going to go up for a few meters and then we'll go back down again. And Matt Damon, showing his complete ignorance of what's actually going on in this environment, asks, how far are we walking? And the guy says, oh, you know, it shouldn't be any more than 11 or 12 hours. Make sure you stay hydrated. And that's when Matt Damon stops and turns around and he sees the door closing and there's a moment of hesitation.
His lady love is on the other side.
He runs back to her and he's like, how could I possibly have thought of ever doing that? But it's not that the relationships brought him back. It was the thought of an 11-hour walk that caused him to completely rethink his sacrifice. He was completely willing to sacrifice his entire life as long as he was comfortable. But once it wasn't comfortable enough for him to do anymore, he was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to turn around.
I'm going back.
I'm going back to the life that I've always had and what life that I'm comfortable with. And that was supposed to be a good thing. And I did not take it as a good thing. I took it as the laziness that has led us to this entire problem. That the moment he was asked to sacrifice anything, he was like, no. Did not sign up for that. I want to be comfortable. Can I go back on that yacht? That's where I want to be.
I don't want to walk for 11 hours. And so we come to the immortal words of Hume. I would rather end the world than prick my finger.
He's not wrong.
And it's exactly why we're doomed. Because of this hole in our psychology. And you know, and I think we can individually kind of metacognitively fix it. And I think, you know, we can kind of overcome it a little bit in our lives. But whether or not we'll reach the largeness of spirit and intellect that we need to avert this disaster does not seem hopeful at this juncture. One thing I did want to add about this is typically when you have this, you know, this eschatological narrative of like the end of the world, it's almost always done with an asteroid or like a celestial object, like coming and hitting the Earth, which is great because it's quick, it's abrupt, it's immediate, and it's irreversible. But when you do it in the climate environment, it somehow translates. It gets lost in translation. It doesn't work because it's not immediate. It's not immediate. It's slow and it's gradual and it's confounded by all these other things. And
it's our fault.
Yes. But the people who made the decisions won't be the ones that ultimately pay the consequence for it. And this is a huge issue, which I think is also then why it also demands a degree of force, because it won't arrive spontaneously on its own. This needs to be kind of a coordinated effort that demands leadership, and I don't think personally, even though I consider myself a leftist and a progressive, I don't believe that coercion is inherently bad, but I do believe that coercion needs to come from a place of doing the most good for the most people.
The Spock principle. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. And I think that's what we need. And the problem is so often people who see themselves as left and progressive are weary of anything that is coercive. And that allows the narrative to get hijacked by these right-wing nut jobs. And it really reduces our effectiveness in dealing with the climate issue.
So overall, I think Downsizing is a movie that has really great intentions, but is really confused about what it's trying to do. And it doesn't take a bold stance on really anything, but does really reinforce that humans are narcissistic and lazy, and we're all gonna die.
You've been listening to Androids and Assets. Thank you.
Check us out on iTunes and Google Play. Leave a review. A rating would be nice. Any comments you have, we'd love to hear them from you. You can also find us on Twitter at Asset Droid, or just, you know, the old fashioned way, email us, marshall@androidsandassets.ca. Music from this episode has been from an Ant and an Adam. Thanks so much for your support.